Good evening, everybody. It is 6 o'clock. Welcome to Rydale District Council Planning Committee meeting held in public this evening on the 8th of October. I've got a few housekeeping matters that I need to go through with you. If a fire alarm goes off, it will be for real, and you should leave by the nearest exit to you. So the members of the public there would leave by the door on your left, and also if members of the committee would like to leave to the door on their left or right and assemble in the car park. Conveniences are located down the corridor, and you will also find a coffee machine and drinking water machine there for you to use. We have a number of speakers this evening. Each speaker has 3 minutes to make their presentation, and I will warn each speaker when they're at 2.5 minutes and that they have 30 seconds left. Will members and members of the public please ensure that your mobiles are switched off, and please can I check that all members of the planning committee have had their agendas. Okay, thank you. I will now drop on to the... I'm sorry, Councillor Andrews.
Chair, I'm afraid I have not had time to study the course, the video of it. So therefore, I am not attending this meeting as a councillor. I have to say I'm a little bit concerned because in previous times, the only planning compulsory course has been the one at the beginning of the council session. And several times I've been excused that on the basis I've been to one before. So I'm a little bit surprised that there's a second course that members are required to attend, which has also become compulsory. Thank you, Chair.
Sorry for the interruption. If we can now refer back to the agenda. So can I ask if there have been any apologies about this, please? Thank you very much. Declarations of interest, please. Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Agenda items 7 and 9 have been lobbied on, both personal, non-prejudicial, non-pecuniary. Thank you.
Councillor Hope.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. Item 6 and item 10 have been lobbied on both those two, personal and non-prejudicial.
Councillor Potter.
Yes, I've been lobbied on numbers 7 and 9, exactly the same as Councillor Windrus.
Thank you very much. Is that it? Members, if you could please turn to the minutes of the previous meeting. Please may I draw your attention to the item 72, which was the decision at Ampleforth, the section 79 application, para 79 as it is now. Could I ask that members look carefully at the wording of that decision and make sure that you are happy with it before we let the minutes go through. If you are happy with that, if I could have a proposer and seconder for the minutes, that would be very helpful. Thank you. Councillor Graham, thank you. Councillor Mason, thank you. Somebody's not voted. Is it Councillor Ryder? Is it Paul? We've only got nine. We've only got eight. Somebody hasn't. Tony, do you need to abstain for the minutes? Have you voted on the minutes? Councillor Ryby, if you weren't here, you abstain. Thank you.
That's why I went to sleep, I think.
Sorry, thank you.
I do apologise.
Councillor Ryby, can you turn your microphone off? And is the... That's it.
Your mic's still on.
Yeah.
Thank you. That's 8 votes for and 1 abstention. Thank you. Members, there is an item which I'm going to take later on the agenda, which is the establishment of the tree preservation order working party. It hasn't met, I think, since previous council, so I think we need to re-establish that, but I'll do it at the end in any other business. Okay. There is no urgent business, so we will move now on to the schedule of items, and it is item 6, and that starts at page 10. I'm struggling to see this. I need members, it's application number 19/00550/M4. It is the application that we had from Commercial Development Projects Limited, which was Home Farm, Braygate, Swinton, Moulton, and it's come forward again to this meeting because it was deferred from the last planning committee meeting to look at local needs occupancy. So if I can hand it over to Alan for the update on that, please, Alan.
Thank you, Chair. The application relates to the change of use, alterations, extensions and demolition work across various units within the redeveloped Home Farm site. I will just run through a series of photos and include an aerial photos of the site just as a reminder of the presentation given at last month's meeting. First of all, the aerial photo, this just shows the location of the site. It's within the open countryside, also within an area of outstanding natural beauty, and it's approximately 2 miles west of Moulton, south of the village of Swinton. Access is taken off Braygate Street. On the aerial photo you can see the existing access, which also follows the route of a public right of way referred to in the report. And at the moment there is also a secondary access, as shown on the plans, on the western side of the site that leads in eastward in this area. This aerial photo just shows the units, the subject of the application, which I'll run through with photos. First of all, unit one is the existing principal farmhouse in the south-east corner of the site. It's proposed that this would be extended to create a 5-bedroom property. This would involve the demolition of ancillary buildings and an increase of the garden domestic curtilage area. Unit two is currently semi-detached cottages, two cottages. This would be amalgamated to form a 4-bedroom property with extensions to the rear. So they are the existing dwellings that would be refurbished and extended. In terms of the buildings due to be converted, unit three is an old stable block which would be extended to form a 3-bed dwelling. And the largest building on site is the complex of barns, which would form 5 individual units through its conversion. The site was a model farm. It is of heritage value within the landscape and of some local significance. To the north of the barn, the traditional buildings is more modern steel portal frame buildings that would be removed as part of the development. And in this area, there would be a renewable energy building constructed, which would include solar panels. The item was deferred at the previous meeting of Planning Committee to explore the possibility of including a local occupancy unit within the development. This plan shows the part of the barn conversion that would be covered by local occupancy to address local needs. So this is a 2-bed unit referred to as 4C in the plans and in the report. This also includes garden areas within the courtyard and to the west, to the western side of the building. So again, just a photo showing the site, just to point out the main buildings, the principal farmhouse, former stables and the complex of barns, and the renewable energy building where it would be sited on the left-hand side of that photo. This photo is taken facing south towards the access on the western side of the site. So the access is roughly in this area here, which would be formed off Braygate Street. Moving on to unit one, the principal farmhouse. This is the southern elevation. It has been subject to repair works that have been ongoing. This was previously a rendered building, and as you can see, it has been subject to works which do not require planning permission that have been ongoing. This is around the back of that unit. This area, the single-storey element would be demolished and a 2-storey extension formed off the rear of the dwelling. This photo is taken facing east towards that farmhouse in the background, just to show the ancillary buildings which would form a summer house and garages and store buildings. Moving on to unit two, this is currently or most recently used as 2 semi-detached cottages. This would be amalgamated to form one single dwelling, a 4-bedroom dwelling. There would be a part single-storey extension off the rear elevation to replace this existing single-storey element of the building. Moving on to unit three, the stable block. At this northern side of the building, it would be unchanged in terms of the dimensions and the actual extent of the building. The conversion works would make use of existing openings for the windows and doors, as would be the case on the eastern side of the building. At the southern side of that building is a concrete block storage room, which would be demolished and replaced by a two-storey extension. In addition, there would be an extension that would go westward that would form a double garage. On the inside wall of this building, there would be a glazed corridor that would allow access between rooms of that new dwelling. So on to Unit 4, this would be converted to form five separate residential units. This is a photo facing towards the eastern elevation and the southern elevation. Again, you can see quite a distinctive frontage on the southern side. And this is the side where there would be the opening, the central opening into a shared parking area, covered parking area. This photo is facing towards the western side of that barn, and Unit 4C, which is the unit that is proposed for the local occupancy, would be in this area here. Panning round, this is the northern elevation of the existing barns. Again, the existing openings would be retained and reused as part of the development. And finally, on this unit, this is the eastern side of the building. Within the building, this is the area that would be used. The opening would be widened, and this area would be used for the parking of cars, a shared area for the occupants of all of the units. This is on the eastern side. In this area, it would be a courtyard garden. The foliage roof would be removed, and this would be a garden for two of the units on the eastern side of the barn complex. And this is on the western side of the barn complex. Again, the roof would be removed to allow gardens to be created. And then this is within the part of the building that would form Unit 4C. This photo is taken facing towards one of the buildings that would be demolished. Behind that is the northern elevation of the barns, so this would be removed to allow for the formation of domestic curtilage for the area to be used as gardens. And this photo is taken facing north to show the silos that would also be removed, and this is the building that would be replaced with the renewable energy building. So on to the report as published. As set out in the earlier report and presentation, the redevelopment of the site is considered proportionate, sensitive, and would better reveal the positive architectural features and overall appearance of the site. The complex of buildings are considered non-designated heritage assets worthy of conversion and conservation, and the works would preserve the natural beauty of the designated AOMB landscape. The proposal incorporates renewable sources of energy in the form of solar panels, ground source heating, and the provision of electric car charging points. Conditions will be imposed in relation to highways, groundwater protection, and protected species. The development is considered acceptable in principle. However, as a result of the open countryside location, under policy SP2, local needs occupancy restrictions would usually be applied. They would apply to the residential conversions, which are units 3 and 4. The application is accompanied by a heritage assessment and viability appraisal, which have been made available to members, and those documents argue the case for the development not being subject to the local occupancy restriction. There is a degree of conflict with local plan policy in this regard. The previous officer report explained that on balance, the benefits to be derived from the redevelopment of the site, which would secure the future viable use of the buildings that are considered to be heritage assets, aligns with national policy and would outweigh the conflict with local policy SP2 insofar as it relates to local occupancy. As requested at the last planning committee meeting, the applicant has revisited the local occupancy situation and has offered Unit 4C as the unit that can be restricted to local needs. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to the 22 conditions as listed in the early report, plus a condition that requires Unit 4C to be restricted to local occupancy.
Thanks, Alan. We do have a speaker on this evening. It's a Mr. Mark Bramall. Mr. Bramall, would you like to come forward and take a seat? It's the large button at the bottom of the microphone, and you have 3 minutes to make your presentation.
Good evening, Chair and members of the committee. My name is Mark Bramhall. I'm the architect and agent for the proposals for Home Farm Swinton. At the last meeting of this committee, members complimented the proposals we've made to develop Home Farm and conserve the fabric of these interesting buildings. Officers reported to you the delicate balance of the finances given the extraordinary development cost of preserving these structures, but we understand that this viability statement was not available to you at that time. The financial realities have not changed since we submitted our application. However, the applicants have considered carefully the concerns raised at the last meeting. The developer has, in this instance, agreed to target a lower profit margin to accommodate the local occupancy request, which takes it below National House Builders' target returns because they think it's the right thing to do in this location. I can therefore confirm that the proposals now include the local occupancy restriction for converted four house 4C, as Alan had explained to you. This will reduce the open market value on completion and thus reduce the margin for the development. We would respectfully ask the committee to consider the substantial risks involved in development, and reduced margins equate to smaller contingencies. We will be looking at all elements of the scheme as we move forward to ensure maximum efficiency and to see if there are additional opportunities within the site to mitigate this compromise. We trust that this revision to our proposals is acceptable to the committee and that we will now be able to move forward with this scheme and to add further investment into the Moulton area. Thank you for allowing me to speak on behalf of the developer and the application team who are present tonight, and we can address any questions that the committee might wish to put to us later on. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I'll pass this to the local member, Mr. Councillor Mays.
Thank you, Chair. I don't want to go over the merits of the development. We did that last time. I think sending it back to find out about local occupancy was a good thing to do. I think thank you for the officers for doing that. I think what was exposed here, though, is how the local occupancy rule doesn't really work, as far as I'm concerned. It just seems the developer, as I found out earlier on, obviously bought the property knowing that the local occupancy rule was there, probably under the advice that they could probably get around it, and it just doesn't seem to be fit for purpose. I like the development. I think it's a good thing to do for these buildings. I think the wider subject for us is really to discuss the local occupancy rule with the council, but I will move to approve this one, but it opens a wider conversation, which we already brought up last time. So.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, unfortunately I didn't get a chance to speak last month because events galloped on and it was deferred for the local occupancy needs to be applied, or not as the case may be. I know this property very well. 2.5 decades ago, I worked for the managing agents when it was a model farm, what we called colloquially a cow palace. These buildings have been crying out for saving, brought into use, justifying their sustainability in the modern world, and this development does exactly that. I have to say that there was some inconsistency in the debate last time, where another application, a large detached country property, was supported quite properly, and I supported it because a member of the committee described ourselves as not being largest. However, this was knocked back because we felt as a committee, or some members of the committee felt, it was an elitist development, which I felt was somewhat inconsistent. And I would have been very happy to support this without the local occupancy needs having been applied. However, it has been applied and as a condition, and I'm therefore content to second the motion to approve this application. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, this still concerns me. I'm quite happy with the standard of the alterations and the fact that it's bringing back an old building into use. That's certainly good. I do wonder what planning gain is the authority getting out of this whole development in terms of either SIL or S106. I couldn't actually see any planning gain at all. Might be an answer to that. And I'm also wondering, there was a pre-meeting with the developers, and were the applicants actually advised that this site should be subject to local needs occupancy? So presumably they must have been aware of exactly what was involved here. So yes, I have grave concerns there. Is it regarded as part of a service village or not? Because it's sort of in the middle of nowhere, which makes it it does make it an exclusive development, which is contrary to our policies of where we should have these sort of developments and people travelling to them, because there are no facilities, there's no public transport, there are no shops unless you fancy a 2 mile walk or drive, as the case may be. So yes, I'm afraid I have grave concerns with this, that we seem to be completely casting aside the whole point of the local needs occupancy in our local plan. Thank you.
Councillor Potter, I'm going to ask the Chief Planning Officer to come back on some of the questions that you've raised. Thank you.
Yeah, thank you, Chairman. I mean, I think clearly the Planning Committee is not the venue to be debating the merits of the local needs occupancy condition, but I think it is a much misunderstood policy in the sense that the local needs occupancy was seen as a way of taking development beyond service villages down to more rural locations, be smaller villages or in certain circumstances, open countryside locations, such as dealing with things like barn conversions, in the context where there was a local need. So it was a residential strategy policy, part of the market town service villages taking something else beyond there. I think over the years we've had that policy since 2013. We've found operational difficulties with that in terms of lending sometimes. But that policy does enable anybody to come forward with a viability issue if there is an issue on construction cost or conversion cost. And in particular, sometimes, from past experience, I can tell you that conversions of a building, particularly where you've got issues, can mean that the units are actually more expensive to construct than building a brand new house. And here we've got what I think in anybody's view is a model farm. They're not listed buildings, but they are substantial buildings within the AOMB, which is a designated landscape, and they are visible from some viewpoints. Certainly I've cycled down from the high ground there on Braygate Lane and looked across at this group of buildings, which are very prominent in the landscape, and to be blunt, they are a group of buildings which we'd like to see retained, and so they're redundant for modern farming practices, so we very often find ourselves then dealing with a residential reuse. But we have to consider a viability where it's put to us. Inevitably, sites such as this are riskier in the sense of when compared with mainstream bulk house building, and so the returns that are expected, which are set out in the papers that I think you've all seen, are not unusual, which is why originally we were recommending the scheme without any local needs occupancy condition at all. I think that was something, I wasn't here at the last meeting, but my understanding was members sent that away to see what we could squeeze out of it, as it were. And the unit that's come forward is unit 4C, which I think is the two-bed unit. I hesitate to say the smaller unit, because actually its floor area is quite big. But it's our understanding of the local needs occupancy condition in operation is that it seems to be more successful with the smaller units. In terms of the diminution in value is around 15% to 16%, but it still means that there still seems to be more of a market for LNO conditions on smaller units than there is on bigger ones. Obviously, the smaller the unit, the less it affects profitability, so I suspect that's why that's the one that's come forward in this particular case. But when you look at the figures, I think it's hard for us to say, well, that's not a reasonable approach to what's now being submitted back to committee. And what the council gets out of this is essentially a sensitive restoration of a group of buildings that we wish to see retained in the AOMB. So I think that's the planning balance, it's the judgment. We wouldn't want to see the buildings deteriorate because they haven't got a use and they become derelict and over time disappear.
Councillor Graham.
Thank you. Just to find an answer to Councillor Potter's first concern, what are we getting out of this? We're increasing the district's housing stock, for a start, using already existing buildings.
Councillor Riby.
I was not at the last meeting, but I question, there's one or two questions that I sort of, in my mind, that occur to me, is that the developer was prepared to pay a substantial amount of money knowing that there was local needs occupancy and then try and get them changed. One would normally have thought he would have checked that more carefully and maybe offered less money in his purchase price or made an option to buy rather than be caught in this potential trap. The other thing is basically, I think it is an exclusive development, and we've got figures gratefully received about the potential of how much it costs and what the sales figures might well be. However, with it, the potential of the exclusivity of the development, I feel that we could be being misled about the actual total sales value in the end, because if you compare it with Broughton, similar size, this sort of thing, and think that it's going to be the same price. If I was the developer, I would expect it to be substantially more, and therefore you don't need a big percentage to swing another million quid into the developer's pocket. So those are the questions that occur to me as a result of the information we've been given.
Members, it has been moved and seconded for approval. Okay. Apologies, we have a small technical difficulty. Right, members, it's been moved and seconded for approval. If you would cast your votes now, please. Thank you. Thank you, members. That's 8-4 and 1 against. Was it against or was it an abstention? No, I beg your pardon, it was 1 abstention. Members, if we can move on to item 7, which is on page 75 of your agenda. It is application number 18/01313 It is Cicero Estates, and it's the erection of 32 dwellings, two-bedroomed, 12 three-bedroomed and 18 four-bedroomed dwellings with associated garaging, parking and access. And that's land to the north of Wayne's Field, Kirby Moorside. And I think it's Alan. Thank you, Alan.
Thank you, Chair. Just to run through a series of photos again and aerial photos of the application site. The site is within the development limits of Kirby Moorside, fairly centrally located, with access off the A170 through Wayne's Field, which is existing fairly new dwellings to the south of the south and east of the application site. Just to point out surrounding residential areas, Feversham Drive is to the west of the site. Neville Walk here, and the rear of the property is on Piercy End on the eastern side of the site here. So, as you can see from the aerial photo, there are roadways that have been formed within the application site, and this relates to the permission associated with a planning application from 2007, which is extant in that the permission has been lawfully commenced. So there is a planning permission that could be built out for 29 units with associated affordable housing that could be built out at any time. Just also to flag up that there are existing walkways that would form part of the proposal to link to neighbouring estates, and there's also a public right-of-way that does cross the site, which would require to be diverted to take account of the development. So this slide, it's not appearing very clear on the screen, but what I've attempted to do is compare the layout from the application of the 2007 application that was approved and the current application. It's very difficult to illustrate that on there, but essentially the position of the dwellings is very much unchanged, and the roadways. The layout is fundamentally the same. What I was trying to do was just point out the three areas with these stars where the additional dwellings have been added to the site layout. So it really is just positions where there previously was to be a detached dwelling is going to be a semi-detached. Where there was semis, there might now be a terrace of three properties. But in, for example, in this area on the southern side, adjacent to Feversham Drive, this was previously three units, but the arrangement has allowed for a standoff of 7 metres on either side to be retained, and the properties are orientated north-south, so it's not affect the amenities of the neighbouring properties on Waynesfield and the bungalow on Feversham Drive. So, photos of the application site and surrounding area. This is taken from the entrance to Feversham Drive off the A170 facing across to the site, which is in this area here. This is number 2 Feversham Drive, the bungalow. And this is taken from the A170 facing north. This is the area on the previous slide, on the site layout plan. This is where the two pairs of semis would be in this area here. So you can just see the position of number 2 Feversham Drive on the left hand side, and you might just be able to make out the rear of numbers 1 to 7 Wayne's Field on the right hand side. So this is panning round eastwards just to show the access to Wayne's Field here off the A170. This is taken facing north on Wayne's Field, and that is the entrance to the application site there. This photo is taken within the application site facing south. So the A170 is here. This is showing the roadways that have been laid as part of the extant planning permission. So this is panning round anti-clockwise. So this is roughly facing southeast. So these are the properties on Neville Walk. This is the east, facing towards the eastern boundary of the application site. Panning round the listed windmill in the background towards the northern boundary, facing west to Feversham Drive, the top of Feversham Drive, and again facing west, and coming round, and this is the existing properties on Wayne's Field. So as you can see, the application site, which has lain dormant for a number of years, is quite overgrown at the moment, and that has actually given rise to complaints to the authority due to the present condition of the site. This photo is taken facing westward. Again, it's on part of the roadways that have been laid as part of the extant permission. And this is just facing towards the boundary with Feversham Drive, panning down southward towards number 2 Feversham Drive, the bungalow, which is here. And then turning round just to show the rear of numbers 1 to 7 Wayne's Field that would back onto the application site. So moving to the report as published, no updates to the report. The extant planning permission that is referred to in the report and the presentation relates to an application that predates the UK financial crisis. So that the application was actually made in 2007. The applicant for the current application has provided information that indicates that that scheme is not financially viable to be built out. The applicant proposes the implementation of a scheme fundamentally based on that previously approved, but with an increase in the total number of dwellings by 3 units. And also there's a reduction in the on-site affordable housing provision. So that would be 7 units, which is 3 units less than previously approved. The site layout is largely unchanged, and by virtue of the scale, spacing, orientation of the dwellings and position of window openings, the additional units can be accommodated without material harm to the levels of amenity enjoyed by the neighbouring properties. It is considered that the principle of the proposed development is well established, and following scrutiny of the applicant's affordable housing viability report, the reduced provision of affordable units can be accepted, and there are no objections from the council's housing officer. Overall, the scheme is considered to be viable and deliverable, and should allow for the long-awaited development of this stalled site for residential purposes. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted, subject to a Section 106 legal agreement and the 31 conditions as listed in the report, and also any additional conditions as may be requested by the lead local flood authority.
No speaker. Thank you very much, Alan. We've got no speaker on this item, so I will open it up. I'll open it up for questions first. Sorry, I'll open it up for questions from the committee first. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, unfortunately, I've not seen the viability assessment for this one, so I'm wondering who provided the independent valuation survey that's referred to on page 78, and if so, presumably that viability assessment was based on the land value was paid pre-2008, i.e. that would be much lower, and the current saleable value, which should be much higher. So I'm sort of wondering why suddenly the viability has changed so dramatically.
The viability document that has been submitted by the applicant has been reviewed by a chartered surveyor at East Riding Council, who has provided a thorough response that it does take into account the construction costs and the valuation of market housing in the area and the likely demand. But in conclusion, it does say that the findings of the applicant's viability survey is that it is accurate and sound.
Councillor Windrus.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Can I just ask the officer what the distance between the existing bungalow is in Feversham Drive and the proposed first house would be? The semi-detached down the bottom.
I can't recall the plot number. But in the right, so in this corner here, the distance would be approximately 7.5 metres, which would be the same on the eastern side to the boundary. Yeah.
Would that be considered reasonable, amenity wise?
The way the buildings have been orientated, in that it would be a side gable that would face onto those properties. The principal views would be north and south. There is a single window in the first floor, which I believe would serve a bathroom. It's not felt that there would be any significant issues in terms of overlooking or overbearing impact, given the orientation of those properties.
Councillor Riby.
I welcome the development of this site. I live close by. It's been a sore for some time. Personally, have doubts about some of these viability studies. I think the history of the place is that two builders have actually gone into liquidation as a result of developing this. Now, whether this is their inefficiency or whether the sums were wrong, I don't know. I am somewhat disappointed that they're offering a smaller percentage of low-cost housing. However, I'm betwixt one and the other because I do want to see this development carried through and finished, and sometimes one's got to pay a price. One of the prices that I will personally have to pay is the Scrublands has provided me with ample brambles or blackberries to pick. Maybe I've been stealing from the liquidator, I don't know, but I will miss that. But we in Kirby, we have another quite a substantial planning application, and people are constantly saying to me, why do we consider another application when there's one stood here not being developed? And yeah, it would be good to see it developed, because I think we do need a new injection of housing in Kirby. So I'm for it.
Can I just say, sorry, Councillor Riby, I think you want to come back in response to Councillor Windrus's separation distance, and then we'll move into debate, but you've moved us into debate, so can I allow the officers to answer Councillor Windrus, and then I'll throw it up for debate.
Thank you, Chairman. It was just a clarification on the separation of the side to side from the side wall of the bungalow to the side wall of the nearest house is 10 metres. So 7 metres to the boundary, but then there's another 3 metres, roughly. So that gives you an indication that's...
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I think we have to allow Councillor Ivy to finish, because he had gone into debate, but I don't think he'd finished. Then I would like to add to it.
Councillor Ivy, do you want to say any more?
Uh, as you can tell, I ramble on forever. I forgot what I wanted to say, and I don't think I really wanted to say any more. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Do we need to go to the local member first, or have we already gone? Thank you. Thank you. Yes, I'm very happy to. I don't know whether Councillor Ivey has actually proposed approval, moved approval.
I'm quite happy to do that.
Then I'm happy to second. And furthermore, I have to say I'm sorry to hear that two local builders who have connections with the site have gone into liquidation. Given the dates recorded for the original developments, I don't know that it's inefficiency, but I seem to recall in 07, 08, 09 there was a certain financial crisis that the world affected the world, and it certainly wasn't due to inefficiency or bad management that a lot of businesses went under. It was a problem with the banks. There were other more salient problems further up, but certainly it was the banks. In answer to that question or that situation. But we digress. We're going to this planning application, and I'm very happy to second the moving of approval. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yes, I'd love to see this one built out, and as we've already heard, there is an existing planning application that is valid and can be built out, assuming it actually worked. I still have extreme difficulty with the fact that they've obviously got the land much cheaper and the saleable value is much higher. And the fact that it's changed from 10 affordables from 29 properties to 7 from 32, as in 35% affordables down to 22%, I regard as a massive reduction. There was a comment, where were we? Oh yes, which will deliver 7 much needed affordable homes for Kirby Moorside. It was going to deliver 10 much needed affordable homes, and I find it hard to believe that the viability assessment of the original developer was so far out that it required such a massive reduction. So I'm afraid I can't support this one, not without some compromise between the two positions. Thank you.
Chairman, I mean, coming back on that point, it was really a situation prior to, I think it was August 2000, and I'll say 8, it might have been 7, where we didn't really break sweat getting 35% because of land values and development values, but this caught that situation, and I think at least two developers have gone on this site who originally had the site, and then another one who got it and has not been able to proceed with it. But after that period of time, we had quite a number of applications came forward where we weren't delivering on 35% of unaffordable, sometimes around sales values at the time. Members here, longer in the tooth, can probably remember those discussions and debates in planning committee where we were, you know, getting around the sort of 25-30% off sites because of sales revenues. And I think while it's fair to say that sales revenues have increased in the intervening periods, costs have also, you know, risen quite significantly. What there is on this particular site also are one or two. I hesitate to use the word abnormal, but some of the works that you've seen there that have already been carried out by the developer in relation to the roadway construction need to be taken out and done again because they're not adoptable. They've got retaining structures which the county can't adopt, so immediately you've got a cost there that you've got to accommodate, even though there's an approved layout and notionally a scheme that could be constructed. That lateral road in particular, you can see there's a little dogleg in it. That's a retaining wall that is not up to standard. So immediately there, you've got to take that out and sort it out and put it right, which is a cost to whatever development comes forward. So you don't need to top too many of these things up to end up in a situation where, in percentage terms, when you mention 35 to 20 something, it sounds dreadful, but actually you're talking about three or four units. The absolutes are a lot smaller than the percentages because, for us, it's a relatively small scheme. But it's a scheme that's been stalled for so long that this site was allocated in the 2002 Rydell plan. That's how long it's been allocated. And it's sitting there, and we're forever getting questions from the town councillors to, you know, the site's overgrown, can you do something with it? And I know that isn't necessarily a worry, but it is a worry because we end up then having to take Section 215 notice action to get the site cleared of weeds or whatever it is. So in all other respects, it's a perfect site for the town. Everybody can walk to the shops. It's right near the bus services. Everything else, in terms of comparison with the other sites we've come forward in our new plan, this is actually a better located site because it's right in amongst it. People don't need to get in the car there to go to the town and do anything or go to the pub or whatever. So on balance, it's one of those on balance decisions. You really think, well, this is better off coming forward, even if we have to compromise on three or four units of affordable housing. And it's heavy on our recommendation to recommend that, but we have to give you our best professional recommendation.
Can I say from the chair, Councillor Potter, that I had similar concerns when I read the report. Now, I was disappointed, but on balance, looking at the tidying up of the site, roads having to be built, I'll end up supporting it. So it has. If no one else has any other comment to make, it has been moved and seconded for approval. And if Sam's ready, we'll go to the vote. Thank you, members. If we can move on to, I think it's item 8, which is on page 163 of your agenda. And it is... I need new glasses. 19/00796/Major Full. It's Yorkshire Housing Association and its land east of Outgang Road, Outgang Lane, Pickering. And it's for the erection of 12 dwellings on exception site comprising of 4 three-bedroom dwellings, 6 two-bedroom dwellings and 2 one-bedroom flats with associated vehicular access and landscaping. And it's another one for Alan.
Thank you, Chair. Just to flag up, there are papers within the late pages relevant to this application, and those documents included an amended site layout plan which shows an extended footway to link up to Hugden close to the north as requested by Highways, and also a copy of the Highways recommendation and conditions. What we didn't receive prior to tonight's meeting is a final response from the lead local flood authority, but I will come on to that. So just to run through aerial photos and photos of the site. The application site is on the eastern side of Pickering, south of the A170, access via Outgang Lane. And the application site is outside development limits. So the development limits for Pickering end at the southern end of Hugden Close. So this is the application site in this area. And to the south of the application site, this area here is where there is an extant permission for four industrial units with B1, B8 use. So that is referred to in the planning history for this report, as is the coachworks, which is this building here. To the east is the Thornton Road Industrial Estate. Also referred to in the report are ponds and the proximity to Great Crested Newts, a population of Great Crested Newts. So there's a pond here and here. So this photo is taken on Outgang Lane facing south. The application site is on the left-hand side, a well-planted site boundary in this area. Again, this is on Outgang Lane facing north, and this is the entrance to the coachworks. This photo is taken within the site facing south, and this area here is where the consented industrial units would be constructed. So panning round, this shows the coachworks in the background and the western boundary of the site parallel to Outgang Lane. This panning round just shows the existing planting, some of which would need to be removed to allow for the new access to be formed off Outgang Lane. The existing field access in the northwest corner of the site would be closed off, which is there. And this is just panning round to the rear of the properties on Hugden Close, which are north to the north of the application site. It's panning round to the eastern boundary, and that's roughly facing in the direction of Thornton Road Industrial Estate, not visible due to the landscape screening. So moving to the published report, the application is made by a registered provider, York Housing Association, and relates to an exception site for 100% affordable housing on the edge of the settlement. The principle of the development complies with the relevant national and local policy for such sites. With regard to noise from existing and consented development, there are limitations on the permitted industrial development, which comprises B1 and B8 land uses to the south of the application site, and the Environmental Health Officer has no concerns subject to the requirement for an acoustic fence along the southern boundary of the application site, and that would be required prior to the occupation of the new dwellings. The further detail has been provided to confirm that there would be a footpath link to the north, and the Highways Authority have provided a conditional response in this regard. In terms of the biodiversity, there are two ponds within 250 metres of the site, and there's a recorded presence of Great Crested Newts. This will be addressed by the implementation of a method statement and habitat creation on the eastern side of the application site. With regard to flood risk and drainage, the lead local flood authority have requested further amendments to the drainage strategy. This is to ensure that surface water produced in a 1 in 100 rainfall event that includes 30% for climate change is contained within the site. This would ensure there's no off-site flooding. If members resolve to grant planning permission for the application, delegated authority is requested to approve those details prior to issuing the planning permission. The new dwellings proposed at this exception site can be accommodated without having an unacceptable impact on the open countryside or the character and form of the settlement. There would be no unacceptable impact on residential amenity, flood risk or highway safety. It is therefore recommended that planning permission is granted subject to the 17 conditions as listed in the report, and the highways conditions included in the late pages, and any other requirements of the lead local flood authority to be resolved by delegated authority.
Thank you, Alan. We do have a speaker this evening, Mr. Jonathan Saddington, if you would like to come forward, sir. It's the large button at the bottom to switch the microphone on. You've got 3 minutes, and I'll give you a warning, 30 seconds when you're right. When you've 30 seconds left.
Great. Thank you. Good evening, everyone. So firstly, I'd like to commend your officers for their consistent help and guidance throughout the last 2 years. Alan Hunter, Alan Goforth, and Leslie Farg have all made significant contributions towards shaping and progressing the proposals. The application before you today closely reflects the guidance that we've received concerning site selection, housing numbers, design materials, and housing mix. The Council has also been instrumental in supporting our successful application to Homes England for grant funding. Should planning permission be granted today, the proposal would be delivered by York Housing Association, a registered provider with a track record of delivering bespoke, well-designed and well-managed affordable housing schemes within the district. The committee report confirms that the proposal meets the MPPF's definition of a rural exception site and would make a notable contribution towards meeting local affordable housing need in compliance with your policy SP3. As presented, the proposal would meet the district's requirements in terms of size, mix, tenure and affordability by providing 10 affordable rent and 2 shared ownership dwellings, and is also supported by the Council's Housing Services Manager. With regards to design, all dwellings are within the tolerance of NDSS and incorporate in-curtilage parking and private gardens. The scale and proportions and space around the dwellings would be sympathetic to local character, whilst the proposed mix of brick and stone elevations with dark grey and red roof tiles would provide variation and result in a visually attractive development. The Council's Environmental Health Officers advised that suitable noise attenuation from nearby businesses on Outgang Lane can be provided in the form of a 2-metre-high acoustic fence along the southern boundary of the site, which is to be secured by condition. Yorkshire Water and the Internal Drainage Board have raised no objections to the proposed means of foul and surface water drainage. As Alan mentioned, somewhat belatedly, the local lead flood authority has requested further technical information, and our engineer has advised that these comments can be addressed, and we would support the invitation for that to be delegated to officers. There are no other technical objections to the application in terms of highways, ecology and drainage.
20 seconds. So.
In summary, the proposed affordable housing units would make a positive contribution to satisfying local housing need, whilst the design is well conceived in terms of external appearance, scale, layout, access, and will not result in harmful impacts. So for the above reasons, I would urge you to support the application. Many thanks.
I'll open it up for questions from members, please. No questions, so we will go straight to the local member, which I think is Councillor Potter.
Right, thank you, Chair. Well, it'll come as no surprise that I very much approve of this one, with much needed affordable housing. Small infill sites, I realise that it's outside the development limits, but looking at the position there, it's quite clear that it's filling in a gap, particularly considering the development of the hotel just behind as well. My only slight concern would have been around the noise from these new business units, but it appears to me that the conditions have been put in place to minimise this, if at all possible. And really, the impact is so insignificant in what is really an ideal position within the town. So I have absolutely no problem in moving approval. Thank you.
Councillor McKenzie.
Thank you, Chair. I think we're all aware of the need for affordable housing, and I would be delighted to second that.
No one else? Thank you, members. It has been... Sorry, Councillor Potter. Sorry.
Yeah, sorry, I've just missed a bit at the end, which is a negative, unfortunately, because I'm just disappointed to see the lack of any sort of climate change mitigation, renewable suds, all that sort of thing. I realise that that increases the cost, but I'm very aware that when you've got a building site and you've already got contractors on site, you've got scaffolding up, you've got economies of scale, as in this case 12 dwellings, that you know it'd be ideal to get some solar panels on the top. And I just feel that there should be some policy, or at least trying to convince these developers to use more renewables and various other methods of climate change mitigation, because you almost wonder whether climate change is urgent or not. Anyway, I'm still approving of it. Thank you.
Councillor Mason, you indicated.
I just want to echo that point. I think the problem we've got, Mike, is actually we can't ask developers that question because we don't have any direct targets to mitigate climate change as in the Climate Change Act yet. We haven't set a target, so we can't ask the question how developments will help us mitigate climate change. So as a council, we need to set targets first.
Chairman, there are one or two sort of nods towards sustainable construction in the design and access statement there, which is actually appended to the report. I mean, I think that's trying to, not necessarily talking about renewable energies as such, but talking about use of locally sourced and recycled construction materials, porous permeable paving and surfaces for servicing parking areas, which I'm sure will come out of the LLFA's final comments in terms of minimising surface water runoff and urban creep and things of those nature. Low carbon lightings, so there are things that are in there in the DAS that that they're saying that they're intending to use. So I don't think it's all gone, as it were.
Okay, thank you, members. It has been moved and seconded for approval. If we can go to the vote. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just to flag up, there is an item in the late papers relevant to this item, which is a response from the Parish Council, which confirms that their response to the earlier application that was refused was that they supported the application. So it's just to reiterate their position. So just to run through photos of the application site. This is an aerial photo of Costa Lane on the southwest side of Pickering. The application site is this area here, which is the paddock, and comprises a range of agricultural buildings and sheds along the western boundary, and further sheds and workshops in the north-east corner of the site, and an area for grazing. There's the existing access that would be unchanged, and the proposed static caravan
as shown on the layout plan, would be positioned roughly in this area here, inside the boundary fence and boundary planting. To the east of the site is the Environment Agency compound and buildings. Millennium Wood is to the north. The hatchery is to the south. And this is Low Costa Mill, which is one dwelling and a series of holiday cottages. So another aerial photo just to show the application site in relation to the rest of Pickering and also Middleton. So this is the western side of Pickering, just to sort of orientate members, the Keld Head cottages on this corner, Westgate Carr Road, and this area here is where new housing is currently under construction off Firthland Road. And to the north of the site is the village of Middleton. So this is just, this is included with the report, just the layout plan of the site and the existing uses of the buildings on site. So there's a range of buildings that are used for storage and for livestock on the western side of the site and a workshop on the northeast corner. The actual red line boundary for the proposed building, that's actually larger than the unit that is proposed, which I think is approximately 40 square metres. So photos of the site. This is taken on Costa Lane, facing towards the entrance. As you can see, there is the boundary planting and security fence at the entrance to the site. This is within the site, facing southwest, facing back out of the site. And the proposed static caravan would be located just off to the left here, in this position, adjacent to the northern boundary of the site. This building in the background, it runs along the western boundary. At the time of the visit, it was used for the storage. It has previously been used for livestock, so it could be a mixture of possibly livestock during lambing, or storage of produce or hay and straw. So panning ground, again, this is the photo of that building. So areas where lambs would be kept with the ewes. And this is facing back towards the northern boundary of the site. So the proposed building would be situated in this area here. And this is facing southward along the western boundary with a range of existing farm buildings used to house livestock. This is facing west towards the sheds where the cattle are housed. And just panning round the paddock, this is facing southeast. The Environment Agency site is just beyond this screen, and it is well screened from the application site. And this is facing back towards the sheds adjacent to the entrance to the paddock. What isn't shown on the plans is the other land under the applicant's control and ownership, which is referred to in the report. So moving to the report, the site is outside development limits and within the open countryside, which is a location where new residential development is not supported except where specific circumstances apply, such as an essential need for a rural worker, as referred to in paragraph 79A of the MPPF. Under national and local planning policy, it is for the applicant to demonstrate the essential need for residential development in this location. The main arguments for on-site accommodation relate to animal welfare for the expanding farm enterprise and the need for day and night care within sight and sound of the livestock during calving and lambing to reduce unforeseen deaths. As set out in the report, it is the projected scale of the business, the other means by which to monitor livestock during birthing, and the availability of existing properties within a couple of miles of the site that are areas of concern when assessing the essential functional need for on-site accommodation. It is accepted that on-site accommodation could be desirable and more convenient for the applicant. However, it is considered that the applicant has not satisfactorily demonstrated an essential functional need for a temporary worker's dwelling at the site,
and that essential need cannot be met by existing suitable and available property in the area. It is therefore recommended that the application is refused for the reasons given in the report.
Thank you, Alan. We have a speaker on this item, Mr. Lee Thompson. If you'd like to come forward, Mr. Thompson, take a seat. It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes, and I will remind you when you've got 30 seconds left. Thank you.
Madam Chair, I am the applicant, Lee Thompson. Firstly, thank you for the opportunity to speak regarding our application. There are a number of reasons we give rise to the need for the agricultural workers' accommodation at the paddock, Costa Lane, which mainly revolves around the health and welfare of the livestock being kept, but also to improve my family's home life. I would firstly like to point out that the application is initially for a temporary consent in order to prove and further establish our business on a full-time basis and then obtain a permanent consent after 3 years. We have made significant inroads to expanding and sustaining our business to provide an income for me which is equivalent to that expected of a full-time worker. Furthermore, we have made considerable investment in the holding and into the infrastructure to support our business. We note from the Planning Committee report that the Planning Officer, Alan Goforth, considers that there is not an essential functional requirement for our accommodation and that he believes other properties available in the area would suit our needs. The livestock which we keep and breed from and as such the enterprise is based around breeding stock. Genetics and breeding has meant that we are having to assist with the majority of calving cattle and also lambing sheep. We have in this year lost 3 calves and 14 lambs, which 90% of these deaths could have been avoided if we had been present. It has a severe impact financially, costing the business a loss in excess of £3,800. With regard to accommodation within the area, as I am sure you are all aware, Pickering is not the easiest place to navigate during the height of the tourist season, which seems to spread across most part of the year. This, coupled with the fact that we believe we need to be within sight and sound of the livestock, not within an easier commuting distance, makes it necessary for the health and welfare of the livestock to be living on site. With regard to the hardship my family face by not having accommodation on site, we spend a lot of time travelling to and from our home to the holding, which is time that could be spent further tending to the needs and improving the welfare conditions of the livestock. Myself and my family strive to make this business successful. We are a local family trying to succeed in a business that needs young, keen people to keep the rural agricultural economy thriving. We support local companies with products we purchase and sell all our prime stock through local markets to try and support our local area. I hope that this gives you an insight into the need for temporary accommodation, and we hope that you will support our application. Thank you for your time.
I'll open it up for questions from members, please. Councillor Mason.
My question is, I'm not sure if I quite understood it. Is this for someone to live in permanently all the time in there, or just in the breeding season? I'm not a farmer, so I don't know if it's seasonal. It would be someone there all year round.
It would be all year round accommodation for the 3 year temporary period sort.
Can I ask a question? Given that it's 0.4 of a hectare, which I think is about equivalent of an acre in size, can that actually support the amount of livestock that is being suggested is put on it during the breeding season?
It's difficult to say whether the existing buildings would need to be replaced or extended. Potentially that might need to be the subject of a separate planning application, but it is a compact site, and I mean the other land holdings are separate from the application site, and
a few miles distant. So potentially it is questionable as to whether there is the sufficient accommodation at the current time.
Thank you. If there are no... Oh, Councillor Ryby.
I would like to ask the applicant or I'd ask the question. There was no actual livestock numbers. The distance between the actual main holding or the rest of the farmland that's farmed by the family and the present situation. So it kind of seems sensible to me that you should live on where there's a substantial livestock enterprise, but I'm unsure as to whether there are a viable enterprise of livestock on that particular site or not. And if it was a problem, why are they housed there rather than the main holding? But these are just questions that I'm vague about. Thank you.
I'm going to ask the officers to come back because I think there were numbers in the report, yeah. Councillor Ryby.
Councillor Ryby, I think if you look at page 201, if you can get that up on your iPad, it's the first page of the agenda report, which makes reference to the site, but it does give some details of the wider farm holding, but also livestock numbers. I think if you look at paragraphs four and five, so that gives you an indication of the entirety of the holding, most of which obviously is Hartoft is 8 miles away, land at Alliston 7 miles away, and then obviously the references to the amount of livestock, and I think also there's a reference to the differences in the livestock since the earlier application on the second page of the report on page 202, which has changed.
If there are no other questions, I'll move it into debate and go to the local member. And I think that's you, Councillor Potter.
Yes, thank you, Chair. It's a very interesting one, this, because I see this as being very finely balanced. It's quite clear that the business is currently fairly marginal, but it's also quite clear that the applicant is wanting to build this into a viable business. And he seems to be in something of a catch-22 position where it's currently marginal. The figures seem to indicate that there is justification for one unit of manpower, should we say, which is obviously the applicant. But he is saying that he's unable to grow this enterprise to a viable level without expanding the business and having this on-site facility for him to live. Now, I'm not a farmer. I've got quite a good understanding of what goes on in the farming sphere, but I've never actually done it myself. So I'm not 100% sure about what the need is to be actually on site. There does seem to be quite a reasonable case to be there on site during the breeding season, and as the applicant just said in his speech, the losses that he's suffered already, which could have been reversed, and with such a marginal business, it could be the difference between make or break. I concede that there are no objections to this, even though the officer's recommending refusal, but there's also credible support from the NFU and the vets, which indicate to me that Mr. Thompson is running a good business or trying to run a good business. I see little impact visually because it's down a quiet cul-de-sac and very well screened. So really, Well, looking at the reasons for refusal, it's all around is there a functional requirement for a temporary dwelling? And that is the marginal one. The second point, it's not been satisfactorily demonstrated whether there's another available property. Well, clearly he lives in Pickering and there is that distance and the traffic and so on, so it is not on site. If you move to the new developments or Middleton, you're still not on site. So I don't see that as quite as relevant. So really, this is it's make or break for this business, and should the applicant be encouraged to develop his business? Because looking at page 219, where it says, and this is referring to NPPF, building a strong competitive economy, supporting a prosperous rural economy, and the development and diversification of agricultural and other land-based rural businesses, which seems to be exactly what this is. So I'm not going to say one way or the other at the moment, but it very much appears to be in the balance, and it doesn't appear unreasonable to me to need to be on site. So I'm very interested in what other members have to say, particularly mentioning no names, those with much more intimate knowledge of a farming background. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
I wouldn't claim to be an expert in anything. I don't like experts, really. But it is marginal. The application is the marginal. And I think my friend over the way described agriculture. The business is marginal. Well, I have to say what little I know about agriculture is that farming is marginal in this country, so it's nobody goes in it to make money. It's a finely balanced thing. I think I've said on a number of occasions on other applications, if we were looking at the applicant, we could support this application all day long, but we're not looking at the application. It is finely balanced. It is temporary as well. So we're not looking at something it's a caravan as well, we're not even looking at bricks and mortar. As Councillor Potter's already illustrated or outlined, highlighted, it's well screened, it's set against an existing steading, a range of buildings, small, modest buildings, that is supporting what I, looking at the photographs and listening to the report, reading the report, is a primarily small-scale grass-fed livestock enterprise. I've said it again, balance. I'm going to stick my neck out and I will support this and I will move approval. Thank you, Madam Chairman.
Councillor Ryby.
Having listened to the discussions, I agree it's very marginal, but I'm impressed by the applicant who's been there some time, and I think if he can sustain a viable situation for the past number of years, we should be very, very willing to let him try and expand. So it is a very viable unit, and he's asking us for a caravan for 3 years. And if he survives another 3 years and expands, I don't see why he shouldn't have a permanent situation after that. So I will support it, and I will second the proposal.
Councillor Mason? No? Councillor Ho?
Thank you, Chairman. Yes, I was going to echo what the last two speakers have said. And we've got to be seen to help in these young businesses. And I'm happy to support it. Thank you.
Can I say from the chair, I've looked at this quite long and hard, and I recognise that particularly during the lambing season, you do need to be on site 24 hours a day. And I know how hard lambing can be because I have friends who have farms and lamb big herds. Big flocks, sorry. But it is for a short period of time. It's for a 12-week period of time, roughly, when lambing takes place. And I'm uncomfortable with the idea of a large static caravan being given permission on site. So I'm very sorry. As much as I would like to encourage this business, I think there are other ways to achieve this objective other than a big static caravan on site with a temporary permission for 3 years. So I'm going to go with the officer recommendation and won't support. But I believe it's been moved for approval. I'm not sure if it's been seconded. Did you do that, Councillor Riby? On that basis, if nobody else has any further comments... It's a temporary. My understanding is that this is a 3-year temporary permission, and it's about the viability of the business going forward as to whether it's sustainable. Is that correct?
Correct.
Thank you. So, on that basis, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so I'll put it to the vote. Eight for and one against. Thank you, members. If we can move on to item 10, which is 19/00888 /full. It is the erection of two number 4-bedroom detached dwellings and detached double garages, together with the formation of vehicular access and associated landscaping. And that's land to the rear of Park View, Finkles Creek, Sheriff Hutton. And Niamh, I believe this is yours.
Thank you, Chair. This application seeks approval for the erection of two 4-bedroom detached dwellings with detached double garages, together with the formation of vehicular access and associated landscaping. I would highlight that this is an exact resubmission of the previous scheme that was approved by Planning Committee in August 2016. The 3-year time limit for that approval expired last month. The relevant planning considerations in this proposal were fully assessed within the original officer's report, which was appended to my current officer's report provided to members within the agenda. And as you can see from this map, the site is the grassed paddock to the north of Finkles Street. It's approximately 0.29 hectares, and it falls within the development limits of Sheriff Hutton. As you can see from the map, there's existing residential properties to the north, to the west and to the south, with boundary treatments consisting of mature mixed hedgerows. I would just note the site's not within the Sheriff Hutton Conservation Area, nor is it a visually important undeveloped area. This is looking towards the site access taken from Finkles Street. And this is the precise location of where the access would be. As you can see, the highway is actually set back from where vehicles would access Finkles Street. And there are appropriate visibility displays to the satisfaction of North Yorkshire Highways. And that's just a closer view of that point. This is a section of the vehicular access, and you can just see here where the grass is extending a little bit. There is room for a passing place that is illustrated on what are the proposed plans. So I'll just run through some of these photographs quickly. This is looking onto some of the properties on Castle Side. And this is looking towards the west again. Again, looking towards the west and Castle Side. Same view, but slightly differently. This is looking towards the north of the site. Again, the north of the site. And again, and then panning around to the eastern boundary of the site. And then to the south of the site. And as you can see, those properties are the properties that front onto Finkel Street, Parkview and Meadowcroft. As you will be aware, letters of objection have been received from the occupiers of five properties and a detailed response from the Parish Council, which have been summarised in the officer's report. And as previously highlighted to members, these were available to view in full on the planning file. As a late update to members, two additional responses have been received from the occupiers of properties who had previously made representations, and these raise some of the following summarised issues. They expressed frustration about the local planning authority ignoring local opinion and intending to approve this already unpopular development. It was highlighted that the feeling of all those who had objected previously was that the previous planning committee dealt with the application in an unsatisfactory way. They're worried that it could be a rubber stamped approval before their objections were received, and the points raised by the objectors are legitimate, relevant and reasonable. I've highlighted there have been no objections raised by North Yorkshire Highways or the Internal Drainage Board in relation to this application, subject to the recommended conditions. No objections were received from North Yorkshire Archaeology, nor the Council's Building Conservation Officer, nor Yorkshire Water. The Council's Countryside Officer had previously recommended a condition in respect of the previous application in order to ensure conformity with the ecological measures put forward within the survey. There was an updated 2019 survey, so the proposed condition has been altered accordingly. The scheme as currently submitted is identical to that previously submitted, and there have been no significant changes to local or national planning policy in the interim period that would be relevant in the consideration of this resubmission. The principle of the development, the amenity impacts, the design, the landscaping and access are all considered to be acceptable, subject to the recommended conditions. Therefore, the scheme is put before members with a recommendation of officers' approval, subject to the recommended conditions that have been fully detailed within the updated report. Thank you.
Thank you, Niamh. We have three speakers this evening, so I'm going to take them first. The Parish Council speaker, who is Mrs. Penny Bean. You've got 3 minutes, Mrs. Bean. It's the large button at the bottom. I'll give you a nod at 30 seconds left.
In addition to the objections already set out in our letter to the Planning Department, the Parish Council are particularly concerned about the access to the proposed site, which is extremely narrow. That picture did not give you a clear view of how narrow the access is. It's not a full drive width, that. It's extremely narrow with egress onto a very busy road. That's access onto the busy road through from York to Hovingham. It's got poor visibility towards the main village due to a bend. That's onto your right-hand side. The bend, the road curves round. There's a bad bend on there. The very narrow access road will not be wide enough for construction vehicles to access the site without damaging the hedgerows on either side. We're also concerned that vehicles leaving the site will leave deposits on this very busy road, and delivery vehicles waiting to access the site will cause extreme problems for other traffic. We know what problems we have when they're collecting the bins along there. And we would like to know what measures would be put in place to avoid this. During a recent residential development in the village, a stacking system for delivery vehicles was employed, but the wheel wash that was supposed to be provided never happened, resulting in unacceptable road conditions in that area. This would be extremely dangerous on this main road through the village. There have already been a number of accidents with traffic joining the road from Castleside, which is towards the left of the site. These don't register on the North Yorkshire Highways records, as unfortunately, so far, fortunately, no one has been severely injured, but they have resulted in damage only to vehicles. We're also concerned that many of our objections to proposed planning applications are in the main ignored. We've mentioned on innumerable occasions that Sheriff Hutton has reached saturation point for large, expensive houses. At the moment, there are several 4 and 5 bedrooms on the market, and now we're going to have another 2 4-bedroom properties imposed on us. We have a great number of older people living in larger houses who would love to downsize but don't wish to move from the village. What we need are 2 and 3-bedroom properties for families and older people to downsize to. We're sure this is a situation also applicable to many other villages in Rydale. So please, when considering future planning applications, take this into account and give us what we need, not what makes most money for property developers. Thank you.
The next speaker is an objector, Mr. Nigel Webb. Mr. Webb, it's the large button at the bottom to turn on the microphone. You have 3 minutes, and I'll try and give you an audible warning, 30 seconds from the end. Thank you.
Thank you. A key phrase that I keep seeing used by the planning department is this one, which is to ensure that the development does not prejudice the enjoyment by the neighbouring occupants of their properties or the appearance of the locality. I have to tell you, this development, as proposed, will prejudice the enjoyment of their properties by the neighbouring occupants. These large 4-bedroom detached houses will directly overlook the rear gardens and windows of neighbouring bungalows and houses. Also, that access driveway, as proposed, will run directly adjacent to and along the full length of the rear of 6 neighbouring properties. It's not just a narrow access, it's a long access. And when I say directly adjacent, what you need to appreciate is that along a number of those properties, as at number 2 Castleside, where the hedge has been demolished, the hedgerow will have to be completely demolished to give the access as shown on the developer's plans, particularly where that proposed passing place is going to be located. I note you've noted that a condition of the planning approval that was given 3 years ago was that it not only stated that existing hedgerows should be retained, but in addition that there should be a 3-metre margin retained adjacent to the hedge within the site, and also a wider 5-metre wide route exclusion zone to be in place during the construction period. Looking at the developer's plans, do they allow for this? Absolutely not. Instead, they show a 2-metre high close-boarded fence down 3 sides of the site. So will the residents of number 6, 4, 6, 8, 10 Castleside and Park View have the enjoyment of their properties prejudiced by this? I have to tell you, they will. In the submission provided by the planning officer, I see that they have approached the developer
30 seconds.
To see if they could confirm and clarify the boundary and plans in advance. Their response in terms of the western boundary and indeed all the boundaries is there would be in the intention to retain, where possible, the existing hedgerows. I have to say those are Weasley two words, where possible. The plans as they stand are not possible to retain the hedgerows, so it will have an impact on the amenity. Thank you.
And now the agent, please, Mr. Newby, Mr. Mark Newby. Again, it's left on. So it's you have 3 minutes, so I'll give you a warning at 30 seconds.
Okay, thank you very much. Thank you, Chair. In support of the officer's recommendation for approval, we'd ask members to consider the following points. The application is a resubmission and is identical to the scheme previously approved by Planning Committee on August the 31st, 2016, decision 5th of September. In terms of local and national planning policy, there have been no significant changes in the interim period that were relevant to the consideration of the scheme, and as such, the proposal satisfies the relevant policies of the Rydale Local Plan Strategy and NPPF. The site is located within the development limits of Sheriff Hutton, which is a service village in the Rydale Local Plan and Local Plan Strategy, where limited small-scale housing growth can be accommodated. The proposed scheme is of an appropriate layout, design, scale and appearance, such that it will not have an adverse impact on the character and appearance of the area. The proposed dwellings would provide an acceptable level of residential amenity for its occupiers and would not result in an unacceptable detrimental impact on neighbouring properties. The site does not lie in an area which is at risk from flooding, and it will not cause an increased risk of flooding elsewhere, and there have been no objections from Yorkshire Water or the IDB. There are no objections from the local highway authority with regard to the scheme layout, access and visibility. There are no objections from North Yorkshire Archaeology, Council's Building Conservation Officer or the Council's Countryside Officer. In respect to the relevant planning representation from neighbours and the parish councils, no new issues have been raised to those made to the previous scheme. In respect to the land ownership boundaries issues raised by neighbours, this is a civil matter and not one which would be a material consideration in the determination of this application. Indeed, members that were at the committee last time will recall that Gary Housden explained to the committee that this was actually the case. The updated ecology survey has raised no new issues, and the applicant is content with the conditions proposed to be attached to any permission. In conclusion, we submit that there are no other material considerations or sound planning reasons that would warrant refusal of the application. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Do you need to come back on any of those issues, Nate? Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Just in relation to a couple of the points that were raised in the consultation response originally provided by North Yorkshire Highways, there were a number of conditions intended to try and limit any harmful impacts that could be associated with the construction phase of a development such as this. And they include an on-site construction management plan, details of the provision of whale washing facilities, and where kind of contractors' parking would be located during the construction phase. And whilst I would note that there may have been other developments in the village, I know one was referenced in particular, where whale washing wasn't undertaken in accordance with the approved plans. If we are made aware of that as officers, that is something that we can, you know, look into and chase up, and we have done that previously where that has been highlighted as a problem. So I think that can be undertaken without any harm to the carriageway or to neighbouring residents. I would also highlight in terms of the hedgerows, the recommended condition for landscaping requires the applicant, if this was approved, to highlight and agree in writing a proposed landscaping scheme at the site before the commencement of development. So it is something that we do retain control on. And then following that, you know, we can consult with our ecology partners at North Yorkshire. And then there will be protection afforded to those hedgerows in the following condition, which is condition 7, which requires protective fencing set a minimum from 1 metre of the edge of each hedge. The other aspect I would just come back to in terms of privacy and overlooking, the distances between the southernmost property, which is orientated east to west, and the property which it directly faces on Castle Side, which is number 8, there would be a distance achievable in excess, just about 30 metres, and that is a distance that's well in excess of our normal kind of back-to-back levels for new residential housing. So in that instance, I don't think there would be harmful instances of overlooking, and that coupled together with the hedge retention that will be controlled by condition, I think could satisfactorily deal with that concern. And I think that's... just one other thing. Whenever North Yorkshire Highways were considering this application, as you can see on the submitted site plan, the visibility displays at the site are both east and westerly in excess of 45 metres, which obviously meets their requirements and has allowed them to support the application in its current form. Thank you.
I will open it up for questions. Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Yeah, I'm somewhat perplexed at the plan on page 254 as compared to the picture that we're looking at on the screen, where the curtilage of the property comes down the access route and then opens out to the right, which appears to be straight across the driveway of the adjacent property. Is there some explanation for this?
You mean further down the driveway where it widens out?
Well, no, where it joins the road, it seems to come down the narrow strip, and then if you look at the plan as it joins the road, it opens out in a sort of L shape to the right, which from that photograph... And
can you step back from that photograph, Nick? There, that bit.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So the...
Well, that's where they're claiming the extent of the ownership. But we can't get involved in that. That's a civil matter. But it clearly it's an unobstructed area beyond where that gate pillar is.
Yeah, right. Okay. So that's a civil matter that we can't get involved in.
Well, we can't get involved in any civil matters. But yeah. I think that's a matter for landowners to resolve.
Right. Okay. Just another small.
That condition, I think, is
well, if there are no more questions to officers, I will hand it over to the local member, Councillor Hope.
Thank you, Chairman. How do I get all the easy ones? The speakers that spoke have done a very good job on this. They're absolutely right. And I don't very often disagree with the highways, but I will this time. From the junction of the, where you're going to the village hall, to the bend in the road, I think there's 9 exits onto that road. That's not counting this one. It's so deceiving on the plans, what you're looking at. It just isn't true to form. So what I'm going to move is a site visit. I know Gary's shaking his head, he doesn't like him. But site visit will sure what problems there are there. You've got a school up at the top of the castle view there, castle side. They come down and go across to the village hall, and that corner there, we've got community speed watch, and I've helped on that. And one car was clocked at 60 mile an hour coming down there. What chance have they got to stop if there's any children or mothers and going across to the village hall? It was right because I was there, Gary.
Chairman, you can't determine a planning application on the basis of somebody else's illegal activity. If there's a speeding issue, the police should be dealing with it.
It was a comparison, and they are dealing with
Well, that's the situation we find ourselves. The Highway Authority have looked at this on two occasions now and said this is a safe access. If there is illegal activity going on, then that is not a matter for this authority to determine.
Yeah, well, they are doing something about it. They've got the community speed watch on. But, as I say, I won't go on any further. I'll just move that we move have a site visit, and I'm sure I can get some back in somewhere.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. I would otherwise have supported this application. However, in deference to the local member, I will second his request for a site visit. It's a very old-fashioned bowing to the local member, and I think we do forget the local member's influence or involvement in the planning committee. So in this instance, I will second Councillor Hope's request.
Mr. Houston.
Chairman, I really do need to come back on this, on the basis that what will the site committee see, and if it's a highway safety issue, bearing in mind the only advice in the room is that of the Highway Authority, what members are going to do in terms of doing anything other than agree with the Highway Authority? I think you need to think about the reasons why we're going for a site visit. We have no other advice other than that of the Highway Authority, who have been to this site on more than one occasion and said this is a safe access. And if our reason for going for the site visit is we think we might refuse it on highway safety grounds, then we've got a problem.
Chairman.
Councillor Hope.
We're not only going to look at the traffic thing, we're looking at the site as well. To walk up there where the entrance was, it looks a lot wider there on the photograph than what it is. I walked it the other day myself, and where are they going to put the wagons when they deliver the goods for the site?
Councillor Mason.
Sorry, Gary, I'm going to disappoint you here. I don't think I need a site visit to see the highways problem. I just want a site visit to actually have a look at the site. I'm a new member. I haven't seen this application before. And I do think, I feel I need to show due care, whatever it is, to actually go and have a look at the site properly, because it does concern me a little bit, particularly the width of the hedge on the neighbouring property. You know, look on the plans, the boundary goes right down the middle of that long hedge, and it just seems to be, I know it's a civil dispute, the boundary, but I just like to have a look at the site, I think, to make my decision. No, I'm comfortable with.
In the absence of no other comments, it has been moved and seconded for a site visit. If you would like to take a vote, members. Right, thank you, members. Moving on to item 11, which is on page 278 of the agenda. It is application number 19/00942/full. It is for the erection of a single-storey side extension to form a dog grooming parlour, 6 East Beck Close, Sherborne, Malton. And Niamh, it's another one for you.
Thank you, Chair. As you've discussed, this application is submitted for the erection of a side extension to form a dog grooming parlour at the residential property of 6 East Beck Close, just highlighted here with a pointer. This is situated towards the end of the cul-de-sac of East Beck Close, which is located off St Hilda Street in Sherborne. And just for your clarification, I would highlight that this is the doctor's surgery at the junction of those two roads. The extension itself relates to a fairly modest extension to be constructed in materials that match the host dwelling. The submitted supporting statement produced by the applicant, which you will have had sight of, indicates that the business will be run with one client or one dog at one time, with a break in between appointments to allow for cleaning, also having the benefit of preventing traffic congestion. The proposed opening hours are between 9 a.m. and 5 p.m. Monday to Friday, and 9 a.m. and 1 p.m. on Saturdays only. And within those hours, the applicant is proposing to work 4 to 5 days a week. So you can see the detached residential property there, and then this gives you a better understanding of how it's accessed. As you'll be aware from the officer's report, there is a very small low bridge leading to the vehicle access associated with the property, and you can appreciate that there is significant available off-street parking for potential customers when dropping animals off. Additionally, in the supporting statement, it's noted that dogs would be on a lead at all times when not within the property. Any dog fouling would be appropriately disposed of, and there would be no employees. It would be a single person business only. As we detailed within the officer's report, there have been 6 letters of objection received, which were fully summarised. The main recurring issues were concerns in relation to the principle of the proposed commercial business in what is a residential area, access and parking on the busy road, and concerns over potential increases in on-street parking. Concerns were also raised in relation to amenity, potential nuisance associated with dogs, fouling, enhanced noise, and perhaps early morning drop-off of dogs. Just to update, you will be aware that there has been a late representation from Councillor Raper, and there also, as detailed within the officer's report, was a letter of support from the occupant of number 8 East Beck Close, which is this adjoining property with which the access is shared, and another letter of support with comments from the occupier of this dwelling here. In terms of the principle of the development, this was considered to align with the principle of what's required in the local plan strategy. It's a small-scale home business operation located within the curtilage of a dwelling, and subject to all the other material planning considerations being addressed, including specific amenity issues and traffic issues, it's considered that home businesses, when sited in appropriate locations, can positively contribute to a sustainable and diverse local economy. As you can see, it's quite a generous cul-de-sac with a large turning area in addition to the significant off-street parking space available. And there have been no objections from North Yorkshire Highways. A condition has been recommended to ensure that an off-street parking space is kept available during the hours of operation of the business for potential customers. And whenever I'd undertaken my site visit, there didn't seem to be any issues in terms of on-street parking. And the doctor's surgery itself does have a dedicated car park, and there is also available parking on St Hilda Street in addition to the cul-de-sac. In terms of amenity, the council's environmental health team were consulted in relation to this proposal, and they didn't have any specific concerns subject to a particular condition limiting the opening hours to those highlighted, and to ensure that the business would operate with a prior appointment system only to prevent any ad hoc customers accessing the site. There's also in the condition a maximum of 8 appointments per day. And then in addition to that, there was a further element to that condition that the applicant must maintain an up-to-date register and diary of appointments, which can be made available for the local planning authority should any issues arise, so we can ensure that the condition is being adhered to. A further condition is also recommended that the proposed business would be tied to the occupier of 6 East Beck to prevent any impacts that it could otherwise have if it were an open business that could be rented by somebody not connected with this residential area. The environmental health officer also confirmed in their opinion a temporary permission wasn't considered to be necessary in this case, given the condition that has been recommended and the appointment system. Furthermore, there is the noise attenuation associated with the stone-built extension and the limits that the applicant has put forward of one dog at a time. So it's therefore considered that this proposal is acceptable subject to the conditions in terms of amenity and in terms of parking and access and highway safety. So for that reason, it is recommended for approval. Thank you.
We have a speaker on this application, and Mr. Graham Lee. Mr. Lee, would you like to come forward? Please take a chair. It's the large button at the bottom. You've got 3 minutes, and at the last 30 seconds, I'll give you an audible warning. Thank you, Mr. Lee.
Good evening, Chair and fellow councillors. I hope I don't come across as a moaner. My name is Graham Lee. I'm a resident and owner in the cul-de-sac in question. As you're aware, there are 6 objectors to this application, and also the local parish council, their objectors to this. I think the pictures there don't quite paint the picture as clear as it could be. It gives you the impression on the photograph there that they've got a big driveway suitable for parking, but there are multiple car family. At 8 o'clock this morning, there's 4 cars on the drive. I thought, well, if somebody turned up with a dog, where would they park the vehicle? That gives you an impression that it's a big area there. Well, it really isn't, not in my opinion. The area at the end of the cul-de-sac is, as the lady said, is purely a turning area. There's nowhere to park in it. Again, it looks as though it is a big area. So our concerns are that there's already quite a large volume of traffic coming to the doctor's surgery, which is right on the corner of the cul-de-sac. And access to the doctor's surgery car park is coming into our small cul-de-sac. There's only a total of 9 properties in there, 7 of which are bungalows, and then the 2 larger houses there. It's a lovely quality private cul-de-sac, and if you were to walk into there, our opinion is that it's just not suitable for commercial premises. It just escapes us how somebody could want to put commercial premises there. The lady there has put a very good case for the council. The family that have the house, they're a young couple. The husband of the house is out at work during the day, so it would have no impact on him, the amount of traffic coming through the cul-de-sac. The other large house there, again, they're a young couple who are out of the house all of the time, most of the week, because they work. The rest of us are all retired and therefore at home a lot longer. So the amount of traffic coming in and out of the cul-de-sac does have an impact on us.
Sorry. 20 seconds, sir.
This is for the benefit of one person, one family, to the detriment of every other property in the cul-de-sac. And somehow, to me, that doesn't seem right. It doesn't seem fair that they should gain, and myself and the fellow residents in the cul-de-sac should lose out. And there's three other residents directly behind me. I hope you'll hear us sympathetically, please, and object to this application. Thank you for listening to me.
I'll open it up for questions. Okay, no questions. We don't have a local member with us. The local member's comments are on the late pages, but we don't have a local member on the planning committee with us. I'm going to open it up to the committee here. Who would like to take it? Ooh, Councillor McKenzie, thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair. I think on the subject of dogs, I can claim to have some expertise. And so I've looked at this very carefully. It's of great interest to me. And I recall that we looked at a similar business not too long ago. I feel that the list of conditions of the way this business is going to be run is very, very reasonable. It's one at a time. There are gaps between the appointments. And some of the fears, I think, are things like there may be a requirement for overnight kennelling. I've never, ever known that to be the case in a grooming parlour. They're in, they're groomed, and they're out. I also note that the properties immediately adjacent to this are fully supportive. And so I'm quite happy to move that we approve this application. Thank you.
Councillor Potter.
Yes, thank you, Chair. I noticed the Speaker said that Niamh had put the case for the Council, and I'd like to point out that that was actually balancing the case between the applicants and those affected. Which is exactly what we're here to do. Personally, I see this as minimal impact, promoting small business activity. I think there are very reasonable conditions which the applicant is likely to adhere to, and it's up to those who've complained to ensure that they do so. So I'm quite happy to second this. Thank you.
It's been moved and seconded for approval, members. If we could go to the vote. Thank you very much. Thank you, members. If we can move to agenda item 12, which is on page 290. I definitely need new glasses. Application number 19/00892/House. It is for works to dwelling to include the raising of the roof height to allow the formation of additional living accommodation and widening of vehicular access, and that's at Greenfields 83 Ruffa Lane, Pickering. And I think Neve's doing this one this time.
Thank you, Chair. As you can see, this property highlighted is the application site, Greenfields. It is to the southern side of Ruffa Lane and Pickering. It falls within the town development limits and is, as you can see, a dormer bungalow surrounded by two-storey dwellings. You can see it's predominantly a residential area with Forest Road to the south. And this application seeks approval for works to this dwelling to include the raising of the roof height to allow the formation of additional living accommodation and the widening of the vehicular access associated with it to provide additional off-street parking. This proposal would enlarge the property from two bedrooms and a bathroom at first floor level to three bedrooms, a bathroom and an ensuite. There would be a further two second storey loft style level with a bedroom, a study and a small shower room. The precise footprint of the dwelling would remain the same, and this application seeks approval for its upward extension only. So the roof form would alter from a hipped roof with a flat roof dormer to the rear elevation and eastern elevation to a pitched roof gable end building with the ridge running north to south. And this photograph illustrates the current appearance of the dormer bungalow from the rear, with the adjoining two-storey dwellings to either side. In terms of the design, it wasn't considered that the proposed development would result in any kind of incongruous addition within the street scene. The surrounding properties, 81, 85, 89 and Ruffa Lane and 5 and 6 Woodlands, which directly join the application site, are all two-storey in nature as well, so it's considered that the proposal would really appear visually linked with the surrounding properties. As detailed in the report, one letter of objection has been received from the occupier of number 44 Forest Road to the south of the site. This was summarised in the officer's report, but there were concerns highlighted in relation to overlooking, loss of privacy, an overbearing effect on the rear garden, and that the first and second storey windows would have a detrimental effect on their day-to-day quality of living. And there were concerns raised that should it be approved, they would need a substantial increase in the height of the proposed garden fence to the rear of the site. But what I would highlight, and this plan is probably quite an effective way of noting this, is the distances between these two properties would be about 30 metres, and that's well in excess of the normal back-to-back distances that we would normally seek when considering new development. And it's considered that the maintenance of that distance would prevent any materially harmful direct elevated overlooking of this adjoining property's rear amenity space. The other aspect that I would highlight is the very mature hedge to the rear of the property. My estimations were that this rises to about 2.5 metres, and whilst the land levels do fall to the south of the site, it's considered that this will help to maintain privacy within the rear gardens of both properties. The agent has agreed to a specific condition in relation to the maintenance of this hedge should it fail. Further details in terms of replanting would be put before the local planning authority. And I would note that this photograph was taken from Forest Road to the rear, and you can see if those are 1.8 metre high fence panels that it really is reaching 2.5 metres, so ensuring that there is private rear amenity space afforded to this adjoining dwelling. There also have been no objections from North Yorkshire Highways. The Parish Council is also in support of the application, and it's considered that there wouldn't be any materially harmful impact on neighbouring amenity of either the property identified at number 44 Forest Road nor any other adjoining properties. Thank you, Chair.
We've got no speakers on this one, so I'll go straight to questions to officers, please. Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. It's an observation, or rather than a question, to the officer, really just to reinforce in my opinion, the lack of the danger of overlooking is in fact that the existing windows, I think we're only talking about 8 inches difference from the new to the old, so although it's a bungalow, it is a dormer bungalow, and there are existing dormer windows that point towards the complainant's or the objector's property, and so I think there's only a difference of 20 centimetres, if I'm right in that observation.
Yep, so the first floor level windows, I can only work in centimetres, but they're approximately...
Don't rub it in.
Sorry. I think in my report I highlighted it was either 10 or 20 centimetres higher. There is, of course, the loft-style second floor level, but it's so that is introducing windows at a higher level than you can see there presently, but it's considered that the distance of 30 metres would kind of overcome any potentially enhanced perceptions of overlooking that could otherwise be experienced.
I think the essence of this is that the dormer bungalow becomes a house, and it's in a line of other properties either side that are also two-storey, which also have first-floor windows aspected that way, albeit maybe slightly on an angle. You can't really see, but you get an idea from some of those pictures. So it's not as if we've got a run of bungalows and suddenly there's a first floor appearing. That coupled with the distances are such that I don't think we can justify any objection, and I think actually in design terms it's probably an improvement.
If there are no more questions, I'll pass it to Councillor Potter.
Yeah, thank you, Chair. Well, I have to say that I think the proposed alterations to this property are not out of place with the surrounding properties, and in fact they're absolutely in place with surrounding properties. There's a substantial enough distance from the property of the single complainant. Looking at the density of housing there, it seems quite bizarre to say there's an extra problem with overlooking when the houses are so interleaved anyway. So I don't see a problem with this in the slightest, and I'm quite happy to move approval. Thank you.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I will second without further ado.
Thank you, members. If no one else has got anything to add, it has been moved and seconded for approval, so we can go to the vote, please. Running to the lane. Thank you, members. I know some members have snuck out, but can we move to item 13, which is on page 302 of your agenda? And I think it's here because of a close relationship to a member. So it is to do with tree preservation. The proposal is to do work to a walnut tree, beech tree, sequoia, lime, two beeches, another lime, a sycamore, a chestnut, and another sequoia, and that's 5 West Lodge Gardens, Malton.
Yes, thank you, Chairman. This is only with you tonight because the applicant, Mr. Paul Sedman, is a relative of Councillor Burr, married to Councillor Burr, and declared as such on the application form, but of course that means the decision then needs to be made by planning committee. As you'll see in the photos in a moment, the trees in question are quite densely growing together on the premises, and most of them are actually readily visible either from Castle Howard Road or Apple Tree Way. In fact, some of them are so close together it's hard to determine one from the other, really. And you'll note from the description of the proposals that none of these are to actually fell any trees as such, but we're talking about removal of dead wood, ivy, crown lifting in particular with regard to the trees which are overhanging Castle Howard Road, and there's been some suggestion of vehicle damage and lifting the branches to avoid accidental damage and further damage to the trees. The one tree that has got more work proposed to it than any other is a lime tree, which is right in the middle of the group, which they're proposing to repollard. So that almost brings it down to a trunk, really, and then limes being limes then grow out from that. The rest of it is what I would call more peripheral work in terms of crown lifting and what's described on page 302 and 303. So to give you an idea, this is the first few photographs are taken within the site, so that's a relatively small sequoia within the site. A group of trees there which are so close together you can almost not discern them. I shan't stay too much in there because the trees in the foreground are actually the trees that are being described. It's the trees behind that are the ones that are being described for the work to be carried out. And again, panning across, in there actually is the lime that's proposed to be pollarded. You can barely tell it's a lime from the photographs. And this is probably a view that most of you will have seen if you're coming out of Apple Tree Way onto Castle Howard Road. You'll see this property, which I'll pan round in a moment, and it's these trees here which are overhanging the footway and the highway, which they're looking to slightly raise those branch levels. As you can see, the shape of the trees have probably already been affected by lorries and larger vehicles going past, and that's closer up. So it's this in this area here they're just looking to raise slightly. Again, there's a sequoia and limes in here. So just taking out some of this low-hanging stuff. And set back from Apple Tree Way, you get an indication of how they're quite a substantial group, this. So there isn't any loss of grouping. It's just tidying up and trimming, Chairman. So in other respects, we would have delegated approval to this, but it's just that it's the close relative of the member. I'm happy to answer any questions.
Okay, I'll open it up for questions. Councillor Potter.
Rachel, a couple of questions actually. Do we have a tree officer yet? And if not, who carried out this appraisal?
The answer is we're recruiting a tree officer at the moment. So the answer to the first question is no. We have been buying in tree officer advice, and my understanding is that was what occurred on this. So we bought in consultant advice from a tree officer to assess this application.
And the other one, I don't know if you're going to be able to answer it, because it says on 6.3, removal of dead wood and removal of compost from root protection zone. And that somewhat perplexed me, because I thought that compost was essential natural nutrients returning to the tree, as in that's where the leaves fall and that's the whole point.
It is, unless it's holding damp in at the base of the tree, which can sometimes promote fungal growth. So it's a bit of horses for courses, really, on that one.
Madam Chairman, for information, beech, I think it's related to a beech tree. Beech trees
in their natural woodland environment, in my understanding, in their natural woodland environment, the leaf litter would blow away and thin out. In a garden, it's not allowed to do that. And I think what's proposed, amongst other things, is proposed to protect the tree.
Anybody else? In the absence of a local member, I think I'm going to ask Councillor McKenzie if he'd like to case it, since he's nearest.
Thank you, Chair. Looking at this, it's not proposing any loss of trees or any major surgery. It's removing ivy. It's getting rid of the lower branches that are getting damaged by vehicles passing anyway. I think it's a common sense proposal, and I would recommend approval.
Councillor Cleary.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Yes, I second this. I think it is. It's the only reason it's here is because there's a close relative to or a close relationship to a member. I think this is standard good arboricultural management. My only comment, apart from the one about leaf litter over the beach, is tree number 8, the lime, refers to removal of epicormic growth and removal of deadwood, which would suggest that, in fact, this tree is towards the end of its natural, what foresters would call a happy chappy, as an observation, but I'd be very happy to second this standard management practice. Thank you.
Thank you, members. It's been moved and seconded for approval. If we can go to the vote, that would be helpful. Thank you. Thank you, members. It's unanimous. Item 15 on your agenda is the list of approvals and on delegated authority. You need to go through that. We also need to look at the establishment of a tree preservation order working party, which I'd like to do next, if that's possible, please. So I need, is this on the night pages?
Yes, Chairman. Just briefly introduce the item on page 13, which is an any other business, is that we have sought to make a TPO in property in Holgate's house and St Mary's Priory Church at Old Moulton. And as members will be aware, occasionally we get objections to the making of the TPO, which has happened in this case. So what we need to do is establish a TPO working party and arrange for that visit to take place during the period with which the order has been made. Obviously, there's a six-month cut-off, so if we don't confirm the order, it ceases. So at this stage, I think we usually have at least three members on a TPO TPO working party. And so we that's easy for you to say. The tree fell, isn't it? Yeah, all right, okay. So we need at least three members of a tree preservation working party, and then we'll arrange for an agenda to be circulated, Chairman. I think there does need to be an agenda, which I think last time it hadn't been done some months ago. So at this stage, I think we need nominations. Volunteers or nominations?
Councillor Cleary, is that you volunteering?
Volunteering, Madam Chairman, right, thank you. Right. I'm putting my forward, in case anybody wants to object, but I'm putting myself forward.
Councillor Hope, was that a yes from you? Yes. Thank you. Oh, gosh. do you need a substitute? don't. We've got at least three. I can add others on the list. Might need a sub. That would help because then you've got three from Fulham. Okay. Councillor Graham, are you?
Chairman, if we've got four. I think it's established custom and practice. We have at least three people go to the site for reporting back, you know, findings to members. So I'm in your hands, but we have four. I would have thought that would give us some sufficient flexibility to have a reserve out of that grouping.
Right, so on that basis, we've got four nominations, if you like, whether they be self-nominations or otherwise. Councillor Cleary, Councillor Hope, Councillor Potter, Councillor Nason. If members are...
This is what we've got.
If you are happy with those nominations, can I suggest we vote en bloc? Yeah. Is that all right? Yeah, let's do that. The next thing we have to do, members, is agree a date for the site visit at Sheriff Hutton.
Normally be on the 22nd.
I can't do the 22nd.
23rd.
Do the 23rd. With the suggestion is the 23rd of October, members. Morning. 9:30. Yeah. Yep. If you're happy with that, we'll put that in the diary. Thank you. Thank you, members. We've got the site visit organised, the working party for the TPO organised, and you've got the approved list at the back on item 15, 14. I think that covers it. Thank you very much for your attendance, and I'll close the meeting. Thank you.